then we can issue the closure on that. So we've closed a lot of the easy ones. We're getting to the hard ones, or the ones that are going to take significantly more time to close. Okay. And my last slide, before I turn it back over to Patty, work planning considerations. So at this time every year, all of our staff get together and we work very closely together in figuring out what our performance targets need to be for the next fiscal year. And then we start working on our work plans for the year, assigning work to staff. And then we also reach out to all the permitted individuals and the dischargers, and we look at that. But the most important thing is that we look at the key efforts and the prioritization that you have stated for us, which is up here: emergencies, public health and groundwater protection, aquatic life, surface water protection, environmental justice, and climate change. You will hear more about climate change coming up in the next board meeting. It's really important that emergencies for a small staff that we have compared to other regions, emergencies, wildfires, harmful algal blooms, cessation of replacement water programs, floods, all of that, it takes a monumental effort on our part, because when just a couple of our staff have to respond to these things, that's a significant dent in our work. Yet we have been able to successfully respond, and I've just been really pleased with all the work that we've done. So with that, I'm going to hand the gavel over to Patty, where she can talk about the upcoming challenges, and then you can probably at the end of our presentation, you can ask all the questions you want of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug, for all that great information on our foundation, our performance targets, our money, or lack thereof, but also on the staffing. Last year at this time when I stood before you regarding challenges, I pointed out we had a lot of vacancies, if you recall, and we may or may not be able to either meet our performance targets or get to a lot of our core regulatory work that we may do, or we'll have to slip on some dates. You were very understanding last year. I didn't expect at that time we were going to have that much turnover as we did, but it's a good thing. We have a lot of wonderful new staff to add to our existing staff, and the new ideas and the new energy is really kind of infectious for all of us, I will say. So that's where I stood last year. So let me go over some of the challenges for this year. Some of them are the same and some are a little different. Our unfunded core regulatory program. Sadly, that's the same I told you about last year, and if you see in our unaddressed needs towards the back, that hasn't changed. We try to be clever, we try to be creative, we try to be more efficient through some of our efficiencies that you're going to see later in like our general orders and things, but there's only so much we can squeeze down in terms of creativity and efficiency and get to our core regulatory programs. This is something that's shared by the other regions. We talk about it quite regularly. As the new programs come down from the legislature without additional funding, the squeeze happens to core regulatory programs. But as you can see, we do our best. We do the best we can, and I think, as Doug said so aptly, our superstar staff are really to thank for that. Training our new workforce. Good news is we have all kinds of new people. The other good news, now we get to get everyone situated and trained, and we did a little reorg and just, but that's kind of the fun part too, because you can match skill sets and people together, but it is a true thing that for the next year we'll be training our new workforce. I'm kind of excited to see what's going to happen next year, because I'm sure we'll be at full tilt next year. and, you know, hopefully more money next year. That's my, I always dream of that each year. Unexpected emergencies. This past year, we were pulled right and left, probably because of the extreme weather events from the year before, the snowmelt, that we weren't anticipating. We had the Owens dry lake issues that we had to deal with, flooding on that. I believe Alpine County had some issues we had to deal with. We had a number of fires, the Sinohab outbreaks. And again, this is potentially our new normal, that we're just going to have to factor in that a higher percentage of our day-to-day work is going to be pulled left or right by unexpected emergencies. I think that's just something we need to factor in that is going to be our life going forward. Increasing Department of Defense disputes. We are seeing a trend nationwide. I am seeing up close and personal in our region for our 8 military bases and our various other units we're trying to clean, which is in our program fact sheet. I think we have over 500 operating units that we're working on at the military bases. We're seeing increasing pushback from the military in terms of wanting to speed up the cleanup, wanting to do less work, wanting to spend less money. And so we're finding ourselves more in dispute. And one of our disputes with Edwards Air Force Base has been elevated all the way up to US EPA headquarters. And Doug graciously agreed to be sent back to Washington not too long ago to lay our case forward, our best case forward, in front of Scott Pruitt's staff, along with Department of Toxic Substances Control. And so we're waiting for a decision on that. But it wouldn't surprise me if we have more disputes going forward in this year and next up to the federal government, which is unfortunate, but it may be something that we'll have to deal with as a challenge. Always new laws and new policies and programs. There is a whole insert in your packet on the state board policies. Our legislature is enacting new laws. The trend being drinking water is the latest trend. There was a trailer bill the governor is considering now for nitrate cleanup, which is a good thing, but it would increase our workload for irrigated ag and for regulating grazing operations and potential and dairy operations and confined animal operations. So that's still in flux, still in negotiations, but if that is enacted, that's a whole new big program for us and for the state board. The policies, the bacteria policy that this board has been so actively involved in with the state board, that's coming to a head, and that'll come to a head likely this fall. The good news is on that one is compare it to a year or so ago when we thought they were going to basically undo the strict standards we had here in our region, it will be holding fast. So basically the state board has recognized the more stringent standards that we have in Region 6 in the draft. That's before the state board. Now anything can happen. I don't want to jinx it. It still has to go to the state board for final adoption. But, you know, that looks good for our region. That was something I know was a priority for the board 2 years ago. That was one of our challenges. Establishing the new cannabis program. You heard Doug talk about that. We're slated to get 4 more positions coming to our region to share with Region 7. We aren't getting that many applications. I'm getting them. I think I'm getting one for our first outdoor grow next week sometime. I've signed many permits already for indoor grows, mostly in the towns of Adelanto and California City so far. But I expect a tsunami of applications to come because a lot of growers are sitting on the sidelines watching. They're preferred not to get a permit. At some point, that's not going to be sustainable for them because they'll be out of compliance of the law. A lot of new businesses are coming in, as well as the Department of Food and Ag gives them a temporary permit of 120 days before they have to come to us for a permit. So I expect that first tsunami of permits to hit me in about 45 days from now. But again, always the trials and tribulations of implementing a new program. The climate change strategy that we're working as a board and a staff and with our stakeholders so hard to complete will be coming to this board, we hope, in a draft in the summer. and a final in the fall for your consideration. You're going to hear an update in May about that. But we also didn't receive any additional funding or resources to implement or to implement the State Board's resolution on climate change. So that will be a challenge because we'll have all these wonderful things that we'll want to do in that strategy, but we won't have the additional staff to do that with. So the challenge is that means where do you squeeze that from in the organization to do that work? It's valuable work, and it cuts across our programs, and we'll all be better for it by doing it, but it's a zero-sum game. So it's a challenge. It's just creativity. The next challenge is irrigated ag state policy. The State Board has adopted a new order in the basis of petitions from Region 5, Central Valley, and from Region 3, the Central Coast region's agricultural permit. And they've now reached an order for both of those regions, but in doing so, they've set some standards for all regions to follow in their irrigated ag general orders. We are the only region that does not have an irrigated ag general order, with the exception, I would say, the PG&E permit has elements of that. In a couple of other places, we have elements of that. But it's possible, based on direction the State Board gives to all the regions, and that's coming, I understand, at the end of April for some of us, we may, as a board, have to step forward and deal with adopting of irrigated ag order for our region. It's linked to that trailer bill I mentioned earlier, which is basically there will be funding available for drinking water and for farmers and dairies to get money from this pot, if you will, to deal with problems rather than being chased through enforcement as a responsible party. It's a very similar model to the Underground Storage Tank Trust Fund, but what's central to receiving the money is you have to be in compliance with a permit. So that you might see pressure on us to actually adopt an order so that agricultural interests and dairy farmers can be covered by this new fund. Again, this is all in flux. It's all in negotiations, but that's the trend where it's going. All right, let me go to some of our priority general orders, plans, and strategies, and that is on, let me turn here, Bait Stamp 4-19 of your packet. Whoops, hang on a second, my thing is falling here. And what we've done is, again, I'm going to harken back to last year when we went with the board about what are some key workshops that we would like to do, what are some general orders. In previous presentations on priorities and accomplishments, the board asked staff, could we think of ways to be more efficient? Could we think of ways to be more creative? And out of that came some core program reviews, as you recall, where we would do a deeper dive on a program and kind of really get into it and come up with some recommendations. Some of it were workshops, like for climate change. And so this document has a number of projects underway that you gave us direction for last year. Last year you told us the climate change strategy was the highest priority project for staff. So we did that. We readjusted resources and work plans to put that at the highest priority. And as you could see on Bait Stats 4-21, there's a number of those that are ongoing. But also based on last year, because we had limited staff, some of those core program reviews that we said we were going to do had to bump out in terms of time, partly because we didn't have staff in place yet hired to help with those core program reviews. So you'll see some of those on Bait Stamps 4-21, 4-22, where the dates are bumped out a little bit. As we get our new staff trained and up going, I think we'll really get going on those. But I kind of wanted to focus on some of the ones that are on the slide up there. The climate change strategy is ongoing. Our general order for federal lands is a priority that's underway that the board has had briefings on. Our general order for LADWP maintenance is an example of an efficiency where we're increasing compliance for one of our dischargers as well as efficiency for them as well to cover all of their activities. That project right now is out for CEQA, out for comment, and our staff are working on that. Our confined annual general order is being worked on by staff. We've had a lot of outreach with the local community and the dairy operators, and we hope to make that a performance-based permit that we will bring back to the board at some point. We hope to get it going this summer, maybe fall, but I might be too ambitious, given that it's going to be performance-based. Our bacteria standards, you hold me talk about that, but once the State Board adopts its standards, there may be some adjustments we're going to have to do here in our region to implement that order. It's a little bit different than how we have done things in the Bassin bacteria, so that may be something we'll have to look at. And our stormwater strategy, the waters of the U.S. and the waters of the State Board is also looking at the definition of that. That's another policy that the State Board's looking at that I think is going to come to a head later in the summer. And based on what the State Board adopts, that will affect us in our region, and we may have to make adjustments to how we do things in our... So that's why that's underway, is being pushed off a little bit because we're waiting for the State Board to act and give us direction. The Lahont region, sometimes they call us the little engine that could. We do quite a bit with our little 65 PYs. I think we're at capacity now in terms of new projects we could take on. And you heard me say the emergencies. That's kind of really pulling us off, that I didn't anticipate how much it would pull us off last year, but it has. So there are a couple of discrete proposed things that I have for you to think about. One is the Small Domestic Wastewater General Order, and to remind you, that came out of a core program review that the board did last year about efficiency. So this is an example of the fruits of your labor and your direction will be coming back to the board for adoption. So with that, it actually will result in efficiency for us and for dischargers. The other one is the Groundwater Remediation General Order. This is for low-threat discharges. Again, they would come to the board as a set-aside or a lone waste discharge requirement. So this is an example where we could have some efficiencies. And that's something that we're proposing that we'd like to bring actually to the board later this summer. I think, is it July or September? I forget, but that's going to come to you soon. September. Yeah, September, thank you. The Lake Tahoe Nearshore Plan update. That's 4 years old now, and it's time to update it. We've learned so much more about our nearshore. We have so much more money available now for monitoring that we didn't many years ago. A lot of research underway. So you'll see a presentation by Mr. Larson about many things about Lake Tahoe, but also an updated nearshore plan for the board's consideration as an action item. The other one is I think is kind of an exciting project, the Next Generation Monitoring Project. This is something that Region 9 San Diego has initiated. They've asked the San Francisco region and the Lahontan region to partner with them. Actually, Jan Zimmerman is our lead on that project. And we're going to look at piloting new technology for monitoring to see if we can use that within our efforts and our day-to-day. We're going to be getting a proposal together with the other regions and seeking some funding from the State Board and then piloting this new technology. So I think that's kind of an exciting project for us. And you heard me mention irrigated lands. It's possible by April or May we'll get direction from the State Board of what the regions are supposed to do now that the State Board has adopted that order for all the regions to change how they do irrigated ag regulation going forward. There are a lot of questions we all have about what that means, what is that going to look like. So that's a proposed action that we may be doing. So I'm trying to, in the next step, start to get some of your feedback on some of these workshops and policies that I just talked to you about, any of the challenges, as well as the key efforts, that document that's in your packet that we do, it's on BATE stamp 4-15. That's kind of distilled down into two pages, some of the key things we're working on in 2018. By no means does it really capture all that we're doing or all of our key efforts. I think if you put this little two-pager with our program fact sheets, you have a kind of a better sense of our universe of what are some of our key efforts that we're working on. And based on what the board gives us direction this evening, then staff will be working on our work plans and our other priorities to move forward this next year of 2018 to get going on our work. And I wanted to pause on a moment to point out that copying our efforts is maybe a compliment. So Region 5 has copied our program fact sheet. Some of the other regions have too. I think we're the only region that kind of displays our information this depth and level, particularly the unaddressed needs is kind of a new and refreshing thing. So when I was briefing Eileen Sobeck of the State Board on our item, she really loved our packet, our program fact sheets that she wants to borrow for the State Board's programs. Also our core program review. We've been asked to give a presentation to all the other regions. It's something the State Board wants to do, like we're doing deeper dives on programs. So I think some of the groundwork we're doing here is being used by other regions and the State Board, which is kind of fulfilling. And this, to me, is a grounding for me as executive officer. Wow, we really get a lot done. And this is also very valuable for me as executive officer and on our program managers, because it gives direction, okay, what do we need to work on next? Gives you a sort of a sense of our universe. So with that, I'm open to questions, input, advice, guidance from the board.
Starting with Keith, do you have any thoughts?
Yes, thank you. First of all, thank you for the great presentation, Patty and Doug. I don't really have a question, more of a comment. I'd like to note that in addition to the impressive list of accomplishments by your staff, that they also need to be credited for the great valuable support they're providing for the integrated regional water management groups throughout the Lahontan region. And I'd certainly hope that that will continue in future years. Thank you.
Thank you. Most certainly will. I think it's enjoyable for our staff, too.
Good.
Dr. Horn.
I have a few comments. So this is really a valuable step to take this time once a year to look back at all that's been accomplished over the last year. Patty and I talk regularly throughout the year all the time, and I mean, so a big highlight of this report has been the amount of staff that has been hired, staff that's left, staff that have been promoted, and the promotions are fabulous. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword. I mean, it's great for the staff that gets promoted, but then management has to then do a second search for the position that has been opened by the promotion. So it's a kind of a double whammy work for management, but it's good movement of staff all around. But over the last year, in the midst of going through all of these interview processes and all that, it's been stressful. But now we can look back and see all that was accomplished through all that hard work, and that's just one example in this report that I think is fabulous. The other observation I have is that because we've been having these reviews and kind of trying to take a more strategic approach to how we organize to do work, you see a lot of higher level thinking going on with the staff. And it's a heavy lift, each one of these things. But having done the lift, hopefully, it eases the workload for the staff. And so, for example, developing a general order for LADWP is, I mean, what a great idea. You know, this is really a good thing. And I mean, I could pick many other things out of this list, but that's just an example where this higher level thinking is really paying off. And I think it's fabulous. I really like all the core program review. I mean, I remember it was 2 or 3 years ago, you said to me, the unfunded work that's done in the core programs is what keeps you up at night, because it's the bread and butter of what this board does, and yet emergencies and direction for the state board and blah de blah comes along, and it's hard to get to the stuff that we're actually originally tasked to do. So the review that we've been doing on that, the reviews that we're planning for the future and other programs that we haven't gotten to yet, I think is great. The question I have is, so the Headwaters, I've been a broken record for many years at WQCC and various other places about the need for the state to pay more attention to the Headwaters areas. Well, that's happening now at last. The legislature has allocated a lot of money to do work in the Headwaters. The Little Hoover Commission put out a nice report that had a lot of really good recommendations about changing forest management within the state. It was really a very surprisingly good report. Surprising, I shouldn't say surprising. I was impressed with it. And the Legislative Analyst's Office just came out with a big report on improving forest management and the Headwaters. I mean, there have just been a number of reports in the last year coming out from, there's the PPIC has put out reports, and it's really gratifying to see that the state is recognizing the important role that the Headwaters areas play, and that more attention is due those Headwaters areas. That is going to be a blessing and a curse for us, because it's going to mean more work. Maybe it'll mean we get more money. I don't know. A question I had was, so in all of this, looking at the role of agriculture and forests in climate change, I mean, there's increasing recognition that the natural landscape can play a role in mitigating climate change. And I've asked for the climate change strategy to look at mitigation in addition to adaptation, and I'm just wondering why it's not included. If someone can explain to me why, I mean, it may not be, I just want to be sure that our policies are not impeding another agency or another entity, a private entity, of doing mitigation in addition to adaptation. It may not be, you know, adding to our policies, but just making sure that our policies are not impeding other people from doing that mitigation work, which is sequestering more carbon. And can someone explain to me why we aren't looking at that in our climate change strategy?
Let me answer your Headwaters question a little bit first. In 2019, you're going to hear from Mr. Sussman on swamp monitoring and triennial review, and Headwaters protection is part of his consideration. So you're going to hear more about Headwaters from us then. So I just want to let you know that was coming in 2019. Mm-hmm. But to your question more specifically about mitigation, I think we are looking at that. That is in some of the considerations we're hearing from stakeholders. You know, that's a big theme we're hearing, is the permitting and the restrictions from our regulatory agencies, as you say, you know, so eloquently, we don't stand in the way of those efforts, is one of the underpinnings of what we're looking at in that strategy. And you're going to hear more about that in Bishop when Mary gives her presentation. But, you know, you make a good point. I think the Bridgeport Valley grazing watershed approach is a good example of that. We had regulated them ranch by ranch by ranch to deal with a bacteria problem, but when we look at that issue more globally, we can perhaps enhance the wetlands in that area, as you say, and get more sequestration, at the same time deal with our bacteria problem, and as a bonus, help improve the Bridgeport Reservoir. So in our earlier discussions with the BRO and the Eastern Sierra Land Trust, who's helping them, isn't that a beautiful marriage? We've talked about, can we build into this metrics on climate change? This is a wonderful opportunity for us as we move forward in the Bridgeport to measure the metrics on climate change. So that is on our minds on all the projects that we go forward. And you heard me say performance-based permitting. You've heard this Doug say that. I think that is a partial answer to what you're saying about climate change, but I think that cuts across all of our programs. That's more than just good government. But when you give someone the flexibility, and with climate change, we're going to need more flexibility. So I do think performance-based permitting is the way to go, because you have to give folks that ability to ebb and flow and change and adaptively manage, but still get to a goal. I think climate change forces us to look at it that way. So I hope that answers your answer a little bit, Amy.
It does. I'm very encouraged by your answer. I would feel happier if we called it the climate change adaptation and mitigation strategy. Frankly, the reason for doing that is to show the rest of the state how progressive the Lahontan Board is, okay, and how out of the box we're thinking on this climate change issue, because so that we're not just being your typical regulatory agency. We're really thinking about how our work can also help solve the problem, not just react to the changes that are coming, that we can be proactive, not just reactive to climate change.
I agree. And we can noodle with the title change, flip mitigation for adaptation. I gave a presentation to the State Board on April 3rd. They were giving the State Board an update on the State Board's resolution on climate change, and they asked Region 6 to be the first presentation of the regions because we're the furthest along. We have the most innovation. So I really got a lot of good feedback from the State Board members on exactly just what you just said, Amy, about performance-based permitting, and if you know that we don't stand in the way of people, that we have some flexibility going forward. So I think what we're doing here in our region, you know, looking at the science, having the workshops, doing the outreach, partnering with people was a new idea they hadn't heard before from the other regions, how we're, you know, cherishing partnerships. It was all new information to them. So it was our effort was well received by the State Board members.
Good. As to your question about workshops, I like seeing all these core program reviews that are coming up in the next year or two. I had a thought, and it was just about workshops and looking at the unaddressed needs list. Is whether it might be useful to have a workshop on the unaddressed needs, and whether by looking at all of them as a group, and maybe having the staff go through the exercise of preparing for a workshop like this, we might come up with some new and creative ways to figure out how to address some of those unaddressed needs. So I just throw that idea out for your consideration to see whether you think that might be useful. I'm glad that you talked about on facility inspections bringing in new technology. So this actually goes back to WQCC, because there was a panel about that. Bob Larson was down there to present on, not on the LCCP, the Lake Clarity Crediting Program, but on nearshore monitoring. But we were listening to Region 1 talk about a monitoring program that, and I just turned to Bob and said, why aren't they building on what we've already figured out how to do in Lake Tahoe? And then it turned out I learned that the Bay Area and San Diego, well, they have the Bay Area has the San Francisco Estuary Institute, San Diego has the Southern California, blah, blah, the acronym is SQRP, which are these sort of agencies that are dedicated to help figure out how to do things, develop new technology, develop monitoring techniques, the mapping of ecosystems and all that kind of stuff that we see. And I was like, well, okay, your urban areas, we need that too. I mean, it was just like I was seeing that they other regions can learn from what we figured out, and we could benefit by taking advantage of the expertise that are in the urban areas. So I'm really glad that this is moving forward. But it's really Region 9, Region 2, and Region 6 right now are the elite. So I stuck the rural, the mountainous region in the mix with the urban regions. So there we go. And specifically on NextGen, so one of the things that was presented at San Diego had worked with a company to come up with a disk that you could throw in the water and it would monitor E. coli in real time. I mean, you have to have satellite connections to do that. But I was wondering if we could use that on Bishop Creek. Just throw that out.
I'll check with Region 9. That they use that, yeah, for to tell if the flows are coming down the new river so they can warn the people at the beaches, as you recall.
But it's actually monitoring the levels of E. coli. And so you don't need a person to go out
yes.
there and do it.
Yeah.
I asked, Lori Scribe looked into it, and it would level. I was wondering if it, you know, what its detection level was, its sensitivity, and whether it would be useful in our region. And she said its detection levels was sensitive enough for us. The question was whether we had enough connectivity. But I'm wondering if Bishop Creek, we might not have that connectivity.
I'm not sure. I mean, that's part of the NextGen project. I think Jan can yeah. work with the folks at Region 9 that with that technology, because yeah. they were working, that came out of Region 9.
Yeah, right. So on the new permits question, I remember, this was when Tom Howard was still the executive director, talking about learning about budgeting and so the budgeting going to different regions based on the accumulated the sum of permits that existed as opposed to the delta in permits. So areas that are already built up get, you know, a lot of money, and our region, because we're not already built up, is gets less money. But then because we have a lot of undeveloped land, we have a lot of the delta. The change in our region is very high. And I was like, well, why aren't you allocating money based on where the growth is actually occurring as opposed to where the growth has already occurred? Any chance in changing how the state board allocates its money that way? And is there anything this board can do to help with that?
I think your help by attending WQCC and other things, I think, is what it helps. And the State Board is pretty much bound by what the administration decides in Department of Finance, how the money is allocated through BCP. So the State Board doesn't have as much flexibility as you think in terms of moving the money around, because it's set in stone already in budgets that are lined up by regions, and then any change that is through BCP and you have to specify it's for Region A or B. Every once in a while they'll give us a slug of PYs, like for cannabis is a good example of that. And then there was some internal discussions about who gets what. But things have been much more collaborative, I found, in the last year or so. Oh. So I'm hoping that trend to continue.
Good.
So.
Another question, this is a question I had in looking at the statewide policy projects. I'm just wondering how, when the state comes up with a new policy, how does that connect with our triennial review? So we've gone through and said, these are our priorities for our region. Do we have the opportunity to say, to consider the statewide priorities and decide where they rank within our triennial review? Or do they just, unilaterally supplant whatever our triennial review says?
A little of everything. We are allowed to comment on their policies as they go through. We do that internally on a regular basis. So that's the commenting on the state policy part that you brought up. But if you ask, do they consider our triennial review and our priorities, not expressly, but they will ask us through that informal comment process to consider it. For example, some of the policies consider existing impaired water bodies as a higher priority, for example, and that's where the nexus is to the triennial review and our integrated report, so there's a link there. But there's not really a way, and I think that's sort of the dialogue that's going on now between the state board and the chairs, is how do we coordinate our priority efforts better between what are regional priorities and what are state board priorities. You have to remember a number of the state board priorities are generated by the legislature or by the governor's office, so they too have someone that's generating these priorities.
Let me just quickly, I think that's... just reiterating or supporting your comment about using performance-based permitting and to the extent, particularly in areas like, you know, the stormwater program in Lake Tahoe, where that has worked so well, if to the extent that, any time that we can adapt that model to another program or another part of the region, I'm all for that. Yep, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Sandell.
I can't think what I could possibly add to what's come before, but I did have a couple of thoughts. One of the things that struck me was, is it possible, and this could be a good idea, maybe not. We have a lot of expertise in the community that we regulate.
Yes.
I wonder whether you could possibly get somebody from an agency that we regulate to inspect another agency that we regulate in place of board staff. I have no idea whether this could be practical. They'd have to have somebody who would know what they were looking at. But there's a lot of people who know a lot who could possibly and might possibly have the time and might learn something from each other by inspecting each other's roughly comparable facilities that might save us some inspection time or give us a whole other look at what's going on, because obviously they'd have to give us a report on their findings.
I think we almost have to look at that. I think it's a good idea. I think we have to look at it probably case by case.
Probably.
You know, the LAMPS are kind of an interesting example of where you're delegating, if you will, to the local governments once we've got approved for them to take the lead on dealing with on-site septic tanks. Another example is on stormwater for the town of Truckee, as you know, we have an MOU for them to do some of the work on the stormwater. So, I mean, I think it's program by program specific depending on how the law is written, whether you can or can't. Like NPDES permits, I know we couldn't ask someone to help us with that. Although we do get US EPA contract dollars, which I'm told is going away next year, but we have them this year. But I think on case by case and program by program, that's something we can look into.
Thanks. The next generation monitoring project sounds really exciting. There's no telling where that's going to go. I see people with clever new apps on their phones that are going to result in being able to monitor them. Who knows what? But you know, I think the next 5 years is going to be really exciting for that that technology. But I had a question about the irrigated lands general order. Maybe you just don't know yet, but are they talking about trying to control, somehow regulate runoff from agriculture, like a farmer flushing their fields to get rid of salt and where that water goes? Is that part of what's on the table?
Yeah, it's actually quite detailed in terms of ranch plans and the, you know, farm acreage, and then have to groundwater monitor, and it's really very complicated. I know it's going to be rather expensive for our irrigated ag farmers to comply with that.
Does the discussion about that permit bring anything to the table about how a farmer is supposed to handle this wastewater off of their land? What they're supposed to do with it, to treat it, or, I mean, how are they going to change its qualities to something that's more acceptable?
I mean, that's sort of the plans they're working on. Region 5 is working called CV Salts right now that they have up for public comment. And so they're working with consortiums. Mm-hmm. So it's, because it's not easy for Farmer A and Farmer B and Farmer C. They often, you'll see in the Central Valley and in the coastal areas, they're all forming collaboratives, and these orders that I'm seeing from the other region, which I expect we'll have to do, is they're allowing for these consortiums for both in collecting the data, for monitoring, and as you say, what to do with the discharge. Those are all in plans that they're doing this in consortiums. In our region, may be a little bit more difficult because our ag is more dispersed than they are in the coastal areas or in the Central Valley. But this may force them to band together in certain areas, like in the Mojave or the Antelope Valley. Farmers may band together. Mm-hmm. That's what I speculate will happen down the road.
I had one other question. Maybe it's just a misunderstanding on my part, but we refer to aquatic pesticide regulatory program update. Is it pesticides or is it herbicides that we're talking about here?
Both, as pesticides and herbicides.
And what pesticides are we? What are we controlling with pesticides?
Well, I guess pesticides is the generic term that is used in statute that herbicides falls under. So pesticide is the uber term that includes pesticides.
Oh, just my dictionary must be wrong then.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's more the law's definition of pesticide. You know, it would include rodenticides, other side, you know, things. Underneath that.
Anything more? Ms. Cox.
Thank you, Vice Chair. The slide that you show on the accomplishments and priorities, I think it's slide number 1, 2, 3, that has all that great data about 24% of the state, 700 lakes,
etc.
The number of disadvantaged communities is kind of blocked over. How many do we have? I mean, this is a great, I want to paste this slide on my wall. It's got some great info on it. Looks,
you know,
like maybe a 5 and an 8. Could anybody know?
Oh, yeah, I can't see what.
Is that the same slide that was in last year's?
I think so. I think it says, mine's covered by something,
yeah.
But I think it's 50 underneath. What is it? Can you go back to that slide, Kathy? Because it's covered.
Yeah, it's hard to
you have to know. I got this metric from our EJ report that we did about 3 or 4 years ago, and I think it's outdated. This is before they changed the definitions of disadvantaged community.
Is this a slide?
Yeah.
That's the slide.
What does it say underneath there? I think it's 50.
Okay.
We'll see if I'm right in remembering that metric.
There.
50.
I was right. I remember 50. But I think that number is higher because the definitions have changed on disadvantaged community from whence that first metric was done many years ago. The definitions at DWR have changed. Definitions at the State Water Board have changed to be more liberal, if you will. I don't know if you recall when we had our EJ report, we were opining about the difficulty of identifying a DAC when they didn't even have the money to do the survey to qualify to be a disadvantaged community. It's like being double disadvantaged, you know, back then. So, you know, I probably would have to work with Gita Kapai at the state board. I think she has more updated numbers of disadvantaged communities, but I imagine our number has grown.
Well, this slide really gives us a good synopsis of, you know, some of the challenges in our region, just looking at those numbers. Doug had also mentioned kind of an interesting approach of maybe using drones to help with some of our inspections. I like that out-of-the-box approach.
Mm-hmm.
Could you also use aerial photography that another agency does? Because Mojave flies 5,000 square miles, and it's this year it's down to a one-foot resolution. That would save a lot of foot time if you could, you know, use that. It's all paid for by public funds. I think agencies readily share that kind of information. There's nothing proprietary about it.
Good idea.
That would sure help. On the cannabis unit, I'm excited to see that, you know, somebody as seasoned as Eric is taking that on. I just think that whole issue is going to blow up. I think there's going to be so much more work than even two, even if we get four more PYs, particularly in the southern Lahontan region. That is going to be a challenging project to take on. I'm really, really impressed. I had no idea what a high percentage of change in staffing there has been. The promotions are great and wonderful. They carry along with them expertise from their other positions. Boy, there's still that void and just all the changing, the learning new programs. I'm so impressed with how much we've been able to get done in light of those changes. I think climate change is going to continue to be our crisis du jour. You know, more fires. The last 2 years have had horrendous fires that have affected the whole region, and along with that, the flooding. And in response to your last slide, I concur with continuing on with the key efforts that have been identified and the workshop schedules that you have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Ms. Cox, you'll be hearing from Eric Taxer, I believe, in July. He'll give you a presentation on the cannabis programs, all the new exciting things and all the scary things yet to happen.
I have to just follow up. You covered a lot of ground. But I do have to agree on climate change. I think it's going to be needs to be addressed in the future. I attended a meeting with the Washer tribe, and that came up as one of their very hot topics. Also on irrigated lands, I'd like to see how the state proposal deals with federal court decrees, the Alpine federal court decree, and the Truckee River operating agreement.
Yeah.
These are already existing, and they on irrigated lands, both water going on and water going off, tailwaters. So I'm just curious how this all meshes together. But that's it for me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, board members.
With that, we'll move on to item five, report by ward Water Board Chair and board members. And Mr. Dias.
No report, thank you.
Dr. Horn.
No report.
No report, thank you.
Ms. Cox.
No report.
We will adjourn and meet here at 8:30 in the morning. Thank you all. You guys covered a lot of ground.
We have a separate room, Kathy.
But all good. Well, the Washoe Tribe has an issue. They're trying to return land.
Thanks for all your input, everyone.
In the Tahoe Basin. I'll let them. It's actually they're going to have to. They'll have to get a permit.
I know.
Oh, okay. So we need to know more about them.
What more to do?
But,
we don't.
Okay.
we decided we'd all get together in the room together. We're in the room together and make some agreements.
I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm promising a proposal. So the next step was for us to agree.
What's that?
Realizing
yeah, these are nice. Monitor, very nice. Facility. And in good microphone.
Yeah. We turn it to the natural. Yeah.
This is very nice.
If you had a big contribution, we have to get beyond the point of having it wouldn't be enough.
Right.
This kind of
perfect. I thought we'd have more interest in the PG&E
and the
Pinkley.
We're just down to Darren.
Scorched and then.
So it's
I mean, he's been the only one for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what
the last
talking.
Remaining skeptic.
But he brought up a good point tonight.
Yeah.
Mass versus
on a small
boom.
Scale. I'm moving forward.
So good.
You ready?
That's right. We can calculate how much was there when we started the calculate. What we were estimating was the plume then, and then the redundancy.
Interesting.
Dr.
Is
making it important to say,
as a project in the colonization.
You know, is
yeah,
that
yeah? You made a good point.
Thank you.
European settlement.
Really?
And it's. I sat in on a meeting. You'll be seeing, hopefully, before the end of this year. It's Meeks Bay.
Then maybe that's the trend.
Have you heard about it?
You mean this part of the U.S. Forest Service project?
Yeah.
Well, you're going to hear about it. Guess what? In September,
yeah.
We're going to do a tour of Meeks Bay, and they're giving this presentation.
Zero comments back.
And
okay,
the tribe, I think, will be invited. So you don't even know yet. I've got that in the works for you.
I figure you guys are way ahead of me.
For which item tomorrow? Which item?
The Indian Wells Valley Salt Lake.